You are listening to Any Given Sunday Australia.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Any Given Sunday Australia podcast, the number one podcast in just the one studio today. We are live with each other within reaching distance for you two, at least over there. It's a very special episode, but I'll introduce the two boys first. As always, not in your basement today. We're not down in the wherever the water bottle says. We're live in Collingwood at at Tim Carty, AGSAU.
Yes,
TC.
Been updated.
How are you, mate?
I'm good. Great. Good to be back in the studio, mate. But yeah, going well.
It is great to be here. And we're pretty much in your hometown, Danny Webb.
It was all of a 10-minute walk for me to get here, which is fantastic. This is where we want to live.
This is where we want to be. Shouldn't be walking, but that's all right. And like I said, it is a very special one that I've been especially trying to get on for a long, long time, right back to when I messaged you and you ignored me before we had...
I probably would have ignored
Timmy,
you too. So.
Yeah, Timmy Gleeson on. He was the one who put us in contact, which was good. Going through this, you're a man that's changed an incredible amount of lives, and I think... doing the research for this, it's more than I thought, which is a credit to yourself. You went number two pick in the AFL draft to my team, the Brisbane Bears/Lions. You were also a punter for 3 weeks for my team, the Green Bay Packers. So this is a huge episode for me. I hope you know that. And you're now the forward coach at the AFLW side and the founder director of Pro Kick Australia, Mr. Nathan Chapman. How are you, mate?
What a nice intro. Appreciate that. I'll sign those jerseys over there.
And the helmet, thanks. That'd be great.
Thanks for having me on. I do acknowledge that I ignored that message for a little while. It was an honest mistake, but pretty funny when it turned out that I'd let that one slip a little bit too long.
It wasn't until I actually played footy against Timmy, and he was like, "Oh, yeah, you should hit up Chabby." I was like, "I did quite a long time ago."
I looked into that message. I go, "I'm pretty sure I've already been on." And then he goes, "No, you haven't." I went, "Oh, I better go and watch that message." And then he vouched for you. So it's been a while, but I appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to it. Watch your stuff and enjoy what you do.
Well, it's been twice as long for Macca because, as we said, he's a big fanboy. So this has been a long time coming. This is a big moment for him. So if you notice him start to get a little bit closer, just whip him
out.
Just
push me away.
Keep him out of there.
I was actually talking to the old man on the way in because, like I said, big Brisbane Lions fans. And you played at Brisbane, drafted in 92, played up until 98 or 97.
Yep.
So the first year of the Brisbane Lions. And I said, Wayne, did we? I would have only been, not to make you sound old, I was only five.
Right.
I said, do we ever go to any functions? He's like, yeah, 97 we would have been in functions. I'm like, what are the odds that a five-year-old me would have been chatting you up at a function?
Well, and the functions back then were a lot different than maybe they are now, but we used to, especially when they were I used to call them the Bad News Bears, right, because we'd get pumped every week by plenty. And we used to have to go up afterwards, and five of us would go up and sell raffle tickets and do all those type of things.
For the 16 people that are in the room.
Yeah. So it was different back then. So now doubt I would have, kicked a ball and told you to go get it so I could sort of move off and talk to someone more important.
Bloody kids, bugger off. As you have listened to quite a few of our episodes, I always like to start with just to get to know you a little bit more. But I've changed it up, and the boys, I don't know if they like it or not, but I want to know, because I reckon you know quite a lot of people. Yeah. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Ooh. Famous person.
Depends, obviously, what you call famous.
It's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm hoping it's like a Nick Saban or something like that. That'd be awesome.
It probably would be. You're right on the money. And I guess... yeah, fame's different whether you're into movies or singing or anything like that. But I would say that, Nick Saban's probably one that comes to mind given what he's done over his journey and us being really involved in that college football world. So, and some of my would call biggest moments are meeting him. And I was actually talking about this with Johnny only 2 days ago. One of my biggest bucket list things was to sit in Nick Saban's office. And when Cameron Johnson, who's obviously just signed at the Steelers, was coming through our program, we did a FaceTime or a Zoom call with Nick Saban. And although I could see his office, and he was looking into my kitchen, and my young, you know, 5 year old at the time was coming asking, can I butter jam on his toast? And we're talking to Nick Saban, and I'm like, this is cool, but I've got to sit in that office. And then that happened, you know, 6 or 7 years later, which was unbelievable. So I would say Nick Saban's probably definitely one.
How big's the office?
It was pretty big. It was pretty big, and it had it had these secret doors. It had all these things that, you know, beds that came out of the wall, and
because he never leaves.
Nothing. Well,
yeah,
a lot of Bill Belichick about it.
I've seen some pictures of it, and it gives you like the Anchorman vibes. There's like lots of rich mahogany, many leather bound books, like all that sort of stuff.
It was really dark in there because of the dark wood and the dark leather couches, but the coffee table had just ring after ring after ring, and little awards, then obviously the
couple of national championships.
What was on the walls was humongous, but it was, you know, sitting outside. Actually, I was late to the first time. When I first went in there, we were meeting with, we'd gone and had a kick, 4 or 5 of the guys had kicked really well, and he'd asked Max Duffy to come and sit down, we want you to meet. And we go, one of the coaches says, hey, we're going to take Max up. So I walk with Max, go down. I'm like, oh, I'm busting for a piss. I've got to go to the toilet. So I'd shoot off to the toilet. And by the time I get back, Max is already in there. So I come in late, knocking on the door. I'm Mr. Saban. Nice to meet you. So it was, anyway, it was pretty cool.
Fashionably late.
Yes.
Which I bet coach appreciates.
Yeah,
that,
that's so. It. Yeah.
Sort of thing you'd really admire, well, I reckon, in a person. Someone who's tardy.
Follow up part two to that question. Are you comfortable giving a quick call now?
How often are you messaging him?
I'm obviously in his favourites.
Exactly right.
This is going to be fun. Let's go.
Yeah. But we pinch ourselves when part of the job where we do get to talk to some pretty high-profile coaches along the way and get some great time with them. And, you know, we were at Georgia last year and, you know, just the Tennessee and some of these huge schools and the coaches, once they know what we've done to get there, the people we've brought through, they've been actually really good with their time and spent 20, 30 minutes just talking and yeah, we're getting to know them, but like more than just a high meet and greet, move on, I'm not really interested. So be surprised at how welcoming they've been and the phone conversations have been good. It's almost like it's different for them to talk to us on the other side of the world and have an open chat. And we've had some great discussions with Kirby Smart just about stuff. And, you know, I remember driving to Geelong and Johnny and I were talking to Kirby for an hour. Different stuff, like not football related stuff, but also, and again, Cameron Johnson seems to come up, going into when he was at Ohio State, getting to meet Urban Meyer in his office was unbelievable. Like, and Cameron's a cool dude, but he's also very firm, vocal, and knows what he needs and what he wants. And I remember the day he said, hey, we're going to go and meet Urban, and he'd been there 3 years. And he walks in like he's getting told off in front of the principal, and he's all nice and upright, and he's like, yes, Mr. Urban. And I'm like, this is not you. Like, you tell me all these stories about how you're the man, and you tell him what you need. and then it sort of flips, because then Cameron introduces me, and then Urban Meyer decides to tell me what his thoughts are on how to punt. And I've gone, well, hey, I appreciate what you're saying, Urban, but you're wrong. And Cameron, I could feel Cameron take like hands in front of his chest. He just took 2 steps back towards the door, and he's like, oh my Lord, where's this going? And anyway, some pretty cool, fun things have happened along the way. He took it on board, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was so interested. And he's like, oh, hey, great, tell me more. So he just wanted to know everything, apparently. So, you know, my wording could have been more subtle, but it was like, as soon as I told him that, he goes, right, there's something I don't know. How do I learn?
So
we had a theory lesson inside his office. It's pretty cool.
And he didn't want to sign you as a punting coach?
Well, camera's going okay.
Special team.
Yeah.
So, he was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many incredible stories that I know we're going to touch on, but we're going to go right back to start with. Mm. Young bloke, growing up, did you grow up in Tulane, or were you actually in Bendigo?
Well, close. So, sort of Bendigo till 5, and then actually Colbenabbin, which is next to Tulane. We were there for 4 or 5 years. So played football in, was 8, playing in the under-16s?
Yeah, yeah. I've got that written down because I have an 8-year-old and a 15-year-old. Yeah. I cannot imagine them playing against each other.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, there was a bit of, well, if you want the ball, you better work out how to get it. And I may not have touched it for a couple of years, but it certainly made me well aware that if I'm going to get it, I'm going to have to fight for it, which was interesting because then when I moved back to Bendigo and then started playing under-12s, it was a different game. It was like...
Were you tall?
Felt like a step back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, okay, I've been playing against these bigger dudes for a while now, so this is... It allowed me to always play a few levels up, which got me ready for the AFL football. So was I tall? Maybe. I was going okay. I felt like I was tall enough.
Yeah, but going from 16-year-olds to you're the tallest in the team all of a sudden.
Yeah. But it felt normal. That was the only option you had, so you didn't really realise there was anything else to do. And that's, you know, let me play.
So you played all those years, obviously, so you said back in Bendigo, and you said it got you ready because draft time comes around. You got pick number 2, but what wouldn't happen these days, you were 17 at the time, and you got drafted to Brisbane, shipped off up to Brisbane. Did family go with you? You went up by yourself?
Yeah. Okay, so moved out of home at 16 from Bendigo, went to do year 12 at Wesley College, played a bit of footy and cricket. They thought I was going to do year 11 again. I said, no, I'm not. I'm going to do year 12. And then would play school footy on a Friday, would go to back to Bendigo to play on the Saturday and then rep footy on a Sunday. So for, I guess, a few years, just played so much footy and so much cricket. Lived with a couple of families during the year 12, so at 16. Got drafted, at 17. Just felt like it was normal. Moved up. Lived with Paul Spargo and his wife at 17. Thought that was normal. So I think my journey had been just, you don't know what you don't know. Well, this is what I'm doing. This is my opportunity. And I went. So looking back, I go, would I let my son do that? Yeah, there's all those things. But again, that felt like different times. And that was the opportunity in front of me. So we took it. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it was probably more accepted then. Do you think it helped, and we're jumping ahead a little bit, but when you sort of made that jump and you're going over to the States and trying your luck a little bit there, having that experience as a younger guy?
Yeah, but also finishing at 25 in the AFL when I knew I was actually probably just coming into my man strength.
Yeah.
And I was probably as fit as I ever was and as strong. But the system hadn't seen me for a year or two, didn't get on with the coach, got a couple of injuries, and all of a sudden I was too old and too slow and it had passed me. When in fact I was just...
Coming into your prime.
Coming into my prime at 25.
Yeah.
So that meant when I got to Green Bay, it was really like a second opportunity and a second chance. And then you would draw on all of those stories of, okay, what's in front of me? How do I approach it? The only problem was I didn't really know what I was doing. And so... which then led on to getting involved in the sport afterwards just to fix some mistakes and help some other people do it.
And with your journey to get over to Green Bay, like obviously the internet back then was in 2001, probably wasn't as good as what it is now, fair to say.
Dial-up
service.
Yeah. Get off the phone.
How'd the whole Green Bay connection even come about?
Well, finished AFL in 2000, in the 2000 season. Knew I wanted to do punting a few years prior, so I just literally, when I wasn't getting a game, I'd just practice kicking torps at the end of training and work on it that way. Finished at the end of 2000, moved to Brisbane for a couple of years, played a bit of footy, practiced the American stuff on the side, then went over to a kicking camp where I met Ray Guy and Rick Sang, who we're now still connected with, and unfortunately Ray passed away last year. I'd been sort of training for 3 or 4 years on my own and didn't know anybody, didn't know anything, anyone. I would just go and kick 3 or 4 days down the park.
What was it? Sorry to jump in. What was your program and like what were your aims and goals with your training? Like, did you know
how far,
what to train for?
Can I kick?
Just fucking kick it high and low.
Was that a good talk? And how far did it go?
Were you using NFL balls?
I had one NFL ball and a Sharon.
Shitload of Sharons.
And it was just literally kick it. Go and get it.
Go get it.
Kick it, go and get it. And then gradually got a couple more balls, which weren't NFL balls, which were indoor arena football. So they were a bit different. And it was, you did whatever. And so I would just kick. Oh, so much so. I got the sorest hip, you know, like just kick so much. But I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Just loved kicking a football. Did that for 3 years and thought, well, actually, I still don't know anyone in America. So I gave it up and thought, right, well, I've still got this energy and bug to be some type of athlete of sorts and I want to play pro sport. So I'm going to be a golfer. So put the footy boots away. In my head, told myself I'm going to be a pro golfer and go to the European tour and live overseas. If I train 4 days a week and I do that for 3 years, I'll be 29. And then if I do that from 29 to 32, and in my head, I'm like, this isn't the next goal. This is what I'm going to do. So got some money together to buy a golf membership. And then just out of a random timing of it, when I was just about to buy a golf membership, I'd sent all these videos off.
VHS.
Earlier. And Rick Sang replied and said, hey, I got your video. Actually, you can kick. I went, oh, okay. So I put the golf clubs away and then used the money that I had for the golf membership to go over, got back into the punting and went to one of the pro kicker camps. And that's what kicked it all off again. And then, well, kicked off my journey again. And then from then, Justin Lepich, a good friend of mine, got drafted number 4. He'll hate me saying it, but I was 2 spots better than him.
Pipped him.
Forget about the career. Yeah. I was drafted earlier.
Danny's a big fan of Lepich.
Yeah. I'm actually a huge fan.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're. Yeah. We've already said, big Nuffy.
Massive fan.
Yeah. He alluded me to John Dorsey, who was at Green Bay at the time, had met with someone who was at the Hawks and said, hey, you're into punting, check it out, see if you can get connected. So I rang up the Hawks, John Hook, and said, do you mind if I get John's number? And he did, sent him VHS tape, and he said, cool, love to see you. And literally I just at that point was on a family trip going to Disneyland, and it was like 3 weeks later, and they just said, well, when you get to America, let us know, and we'll fly you up. Flew up the next day, and, yeah, within 24 hours got signed. It was quite bizarre. Yeah,
incredible.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, so did you just go there and it was literally show us what you've got?
Yeah, so it was like a 30-hour flight, got there at midnight, got up at 6 a.m., had a bit of a walk around, look at the facility, had lunch there. Then the next morning got up at 6, brought us in for brekkie, and then let's go and kick. I swear I kicked 300 balls. I've actually got video of it. It's on a CD, but I didn't realise that these things don't have CD players anymore. And literally just kick ball after ball after ball. And got changed, walk inside. They said, come up to the office, we're going to sign you to a 3-year deal. And I'm like, right, okay, that escalated pretty quick. Which I didn't know.
Year and a half?
I didn't know what the contract meant. I was like, cool, I'm not going to go and buy a car now or what?
Yeah.
But I didn't understand it. And so... yeah, there were some of the things that sort of happened that, you know, if I'd have known differently, I could have prepared better. I could have worked out what my training schedule was going to be like. All I thought at the time was I'm just going to kick a ball because that's what I do. I'm good at it. But I had to basically learn on the hop when I got there. And
What point of season were we at when they got you over for the workout and then?
It was 2 weeks before the draft.
Yeah.
So
about this time.
Yeah. Really? So they just let go of a guy called John Ryan. They just won the Super Bowl. And they let John Ryan go, and I've turned up. They've signed me, and I went, cool, we're in. We're on.
Championship team, let's go.
But when I was there, all the scouts were
this
out.
This is all too easy.
Yeah, right? I didn't realise how many people were going to be on the roster.
Yeah.
Right before the draft, they'd done all their scouting. They were going to draft someone. So 2 weeks later, they draft BJ Sanders in the 3rd round. They pay him $1 million guaranteed money, and I'm like, okay, cool. Well, everyone gets drafted, so we've just got to beat him out. But not really knowing that that meant he was going to play. He was their guy. He won a Ray Guy Award at the Ohio State. Pretty talented, and they brought him in. But I just took that as the challenge, and I'll beat him out. I'm older and wiser, and I just got to use that craft. But there was probably a little bit more politics behind it that meant that he was going to be the guy. Yeah.
What do you think was the reason they signed you if they knew they were going to draft him?
Well, they'll always have a couple
just to
on their
fill
roster.
The spots on the roster.
And
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know,
he might not work out, I suppose.
Yeah, well,
give this Aussie a chance. Well, also, injuries. Like,
yeah, but I mean, I was probably intriguing to them to a degree. And it didn't cost them anything for me to be there except put me up in a hotel. Yeah. And my family at the time. So
and a bit of paper that lies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was involved in that 3 weeks?
Well, I was there for we were there for three weeks, then had to go home, get some visa work done, come back, then it was sort of stay through. You know, the draft was there, then the OTAs were on, then training camp, etc. So it was a bit of back and forth. But then yeah, it was literally, okay, I guess I'll go and grab some stuff, ring the bank, hi, I won't be here anymore. Put the mortgage on hold and
how much is
that? I've
got $1.5 million coming.
Yeah.
Though, don't worry.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was a little bit of a weird feeling until quite quickly a light and the message was no, you won't get any of that until you make the team. So, but it was one of the I sort of equated it to the 7 or 8 months there was as exciting as 8 years in the AFL. And the first year in the AFL, exciting, busy, playing football. Yeah, then there's some injuries and there was some form and coaches and trying to battle all of that as a young player in the state. Yeah, it's draining. Pro sport's hard. It looks good on TV and everyone wants to do it, but it's also difficult, emotional, stressful, all those things come into it. So being older and more mature and getting a second opportunity, I knew it was that so I could enjoy it a bit more, not knowing the outcome. Okay, well, I'll just battle away. This is what I'd like to happen. But being in the position to be able to do it or try for it was just as rewarding, even though I didn't quite make it. Well, yeah, I would also say things happen for a reason. And, you know, it put me into where I am today, which is being able to help other guys go across there. So, as I say, maybe I could have got a job, played a couple of years for Green Bay and I'm living in the Bahamas and then none of this happens, right? So,
yeah.
Well, maybe it does, just with someone else. So I've got a lot out of it by not making it long-term in the NFL.
Did you – this is my Green Bay Nuffy coming out of me a little bit.
Here we go.
Ben, please, as short as you want to be, but going in and training, like at the time, I've got some names written down, Brett Favre, Donald Driver,
yeah.
Armand Green, like legends – of our club, my club, your club,
yeah,
our club. What's it like being around those guys, like every day?
Yeah, well, they were pretty cool. Brett Favre was funny, really welcoming, and again, I was like a fluffy new toy from the other side of the world that they hadn't seen. And to be honest, their introduction to me was our first team meeting. I'd gone there, had the workout on the first. I had a bit of a kick on the first day I got there, and had the workout on the second day. So I've had a kick, gone in, stripped down, got in the spa, and I thought, well, there's no one here. It's the off season. They're just working me out. It's like I've just walked in. I could have been the equipment guy picking up towels, you name it. I'm in the spa and I'm like, this is pretty cool. No one's around. Facilities are unbelievable. Anyway, it wasn't Amar Green. I can't remember who it was, but it was the type of Amar or as Donald Driver. I'm just about to get out because I'm sweating, I'm hot, I'm dehydrated, I've got to get out. Anyway, let's just say Donald Driver gets in. Comes in, gets in the spa, I thought, shit, I can't get out now. I'm gonna have a conversation. Like, so I sat in there another 20. I'm literally nearly passing out and I'm holding onto the edge. I'm like, I don't want to be rude, but I've got to get out now, whatever. Anyway, go over, swan over to the you know, railings, climb out, think nothing of it, grab me towel, shower up. Leave. Anyway, the next day, have a workout, come back in, same thing happens. Meet a couple of people in the spa, or I'm already in there, and then I get out, dry myself off, blah, blah, blah. That week, we have a full team meeting. Everyone's in there, and one of the guys had, it was Donald Driver, has gone, has told the head coach what happened. And when the new guys had to introduce themselves, had said, where you're from, what's your school, where you're from, blah, blah, blah. When they introduced me, what's your name, where you're from, and then proceeded to say, now, next time you get in the frickin' spa, can you wear some underpants? So I didn't realise at the time that it was a thing that you had to wear some trunks in there. So I'm getting in there, my skinny white butts just, and like, it was like really, for them, was a bit confronting. So, yeah, since then.
They went to fanny birthday suit.
Yeah. No, apparently not, right? So then they'd had to put a sign up at Green Bay. So getting into this spa, you must wear trunks into
yes,
the
Yes, what a legacy
thing,
to leave. Because that's so normal here, like, with our sport.
So here's the debate. Yeah. So I'm having this conversation not long ago, and no one else seems to think it is normal. I'm like, I'm sure being at Hawthorn and Brisbane, we got in the spa in the nude. I could.
Ring him up.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask him. So, yeah, I thought it was normal. So
local footy is definitely
100%.
Yeah, local. I mean, maybe once you get to professional, maybe you have to. I don't know. But local footy is definitely still a thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so for all the haters out there, I was right.
Yeah. You're getting bullied. What are you wearing trunks for?
Did you sign the sign on your way out?
Well, I haven't been back since.
No, you got to go back and just get a little squiggle on it.
Right, how good is still there?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
At least you would have left definitely an impression on those lads for sure.
Yeah. So in terms of the players, unbelievable. I was older as well, so there was a commonality there, being around sport that they were interested to hear about, but they were also really comfortable in their own game, so there was more freedom for them to just come and want to talk. But it was certainly, it took me a while to get to understand how big they were, but being in the locker room was pretty special to be around some of those types of players.
Yeah.
And that's the best story we could have asked for. That's awesome. That's so good. So your time, unfortunately, ends in Green Bay. You go up. Is it the same year you go to Chicago, or the next year you end up in Chicago?
Next year. So played in some practice matches. Played in the intra club. Kicked all right. So everything was scripted. Intra club. BJ Sanders was going to have two kicks, and I was going to have two kicks. He has his two. I have one. I had a pretty good kick. He had two ordinary ones. Next week, first practice match, he has 10 kicks. I had zero. Mm-hmm. Didn't kick very well.
Ooh,
then the next week, they're on. But I had three kicks. He had seven. I had one okay kick, two shit kicks. And then that was pretty much it. And he didn't kick all that well, BJ, at the time. And so they're like, well, we've drafted a guy in the third round, paid him $1 million, and he's not quite hitting his straps. We've got a guy from the other side of the world that we were just waiting for you to make a mistake, which I did. And then they said, right, we've got to get someone else in, a veteran. We're going to have to keep the guy we've just paid. So for almost like unheard of, they had two active punters on their roster that year just to help guide BJ through it. Bring in Brian Barker. Was it like a 14-year vet, which meant I was out. So that, one opportunity to make it count, I didn't make it count, which it was interesting. That the week prior, I felt like I was on. I'd set myself this massive – I was getting ready for that day, and I didn't kick. So that I was drained. I slept for literally 2 days, and I never kicked a ball. Had to get myself up for the next week. Was a little different. Didn't kick great. See you later. Got the tap on the shoulder. I remember it was a team meeting – on maybe the Monday or the Tuesday after the game, sitting down, getting ready for everyone to start, got a tap on the shoulder. Hey, can you go and see Johnny Dorsey up in his office? Went up and saw him. He said, thanks, but no thanks, you're out, which was pretty cool. And then it was like, am I going to get back to Australia?
You drove me to the airport at least.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a little bit like that. It's pretty cool.
And then, ruthless.
Yeah, similar up in Chicago. I didn't.
Yeah, so then I was like, okay, well, this is what I want to do. Go back. Continued to train, had to wait another 12 months. Got a connection then through a friend, John Tate, who was what was he playing? Maybe a defensive tackle for Chicago. And he was working out in a gym in Bendigo. My brothers heard that he was there, got a connection. Got the story going, and he said, yeah, I'll call my coach and see if we can get you in for a 3-day mini camp. So that next year, had that all set up, then made one more phone call, got a workout at Cincinnati, but Cincinnati had said, you can come and work out with us, but you have to see us before you go to Chicago. I went, cool, but literally I'm just going to get off a plane, so my jet lag is going to be through the roof. And they said, well, then don't come. Like, what do you want to do? Well, I'm going to come, right?
Yeah.
So I got off a plane, literally got there in the afternoon, and the next morning was working out for Cincinnati, and it was horrendous. I think I actually went to the coach 20 minutes and said, hey, listen, this ain't going so well. So I got get it. And he's like, let's just keep kicking. You're here, you've come and flown a long way, let's carry it out. That coach's name was Darren Simmons, still at the Bengals now, unbelievable coach, long-term special teams coach. Was it Marvin? The Bengals head coach at the time, Marvin Lewis, maybe. He watched it, didn't go so well, but there was a legitimate job there, as in that was an opportunity for a job. The opportunity at Chicago, they just had Brad Maynard there. He'd just become all pro, won all these awards. So he was always going to be their guy. So I've kicked horrendously at Cincinnati, gone to Chicago, warmed up horrifically. Like, things were fucking going sideways. Mm-mm. It was really, really windy. But then in team punt, kicked really well. And did that for 2 days. When I went to Chicago, go in to sign the 3-day paperwork, they go, hey, sign this, but you ain't getting the job, just so you know. So don't get any thoughts about it. We've got an all-pro here. I'm like, cool, no worries. Sign me up. Went out there, kicked really well. Actually averaged 59 yards over 12 kicks. And coach still wasn't happy and said, we're going to let you go. I'm like, okay. How'd I go?
50 so, yards. At least you were pre-warned.
Yeah, so kicked poor at the team when there was a job, and at Chicago there wasn't, and I've actually done really well. And then it's like, okay, well, I've run out of money and time now. I'm going to go back. And
can you send this workout down to Cincy? Can you send my numbers
put
down?
Some time.
But again, that's just a part of the journey and the story, and that's where we ended up. Yeah.
And then from there, for those that are long-time listeners, we mentioned the name, and you've already mentioned the name, Johnny Smith.
Yep.
He's a legend getting around.
Yep.
He'll tell you that.
He does.
How did you meet the great man? And from there, I'm presuming the two of you together, you know, let's give pro kick a crack. Like, how does that all happen?
So then I'd played, was sort of playing, I guess, tried out for this Victorian team. There was a bit of an arena comp at the time. It was like, okay, well, I'll just try and do whatever. And through a mutual connection, met Johnny, and Johnny loved his NFL and had been, in the system, or had worked out for a couple of teams many years earlier in the 80s, was the kicker for the Victorian team, met him that way as well, and then had also at the same time was just took a young fellow who could kick pretty well to Hawaii to go and have a workout, and or it might have been Washington State actually. So it was almost like we were talking about doing the same thing, and he just had a friend that he took over and showed him the way. And then when we came back, really connected, and he loved it. It was a good hobby for him. He had lots of networks and knowledge on the game, and I didn't know shit. I didn't know anything, the rules or the who's who, and he's like an encyclopedia. So for me, just learning the knowledge off him was unbelievable. So he could teach me and the players the game, and I could try and teach him how to punt, and felt like that was a pretty good system. And then we at the time when we started, I was living in Brisbane, so I would commute down 3 days a week, train the four or five guys we had, then fly back to Brisbane, then come back and forward. So I did that for many years. And Johnny would pick me up, would stay up all night in his office, calling coaches. It was just literally dial until they pick up, just dial until they pick up. Johnny would drive home, get 2 hours sleep, and we'd be back training the next morning and doing our work. So it was a slog.
How was it calling those coaches? Because obviously back in 2007 when it started, you've gone over, tried out for teams, but it surely wasn't a much of a done thing as it is now, Australians going over and being punters, especially in college.
Yeah.
How was it when you were first calling those coaches being like, we've got a player to send you?
Well, we had to convince parents of students here that we knew what we were doing. and that we're, hi, nice to meet you, nice to meet your son. We'll take over their academic future from here, thanks, and we're going to teach them how to kick. And they were like, well, how long have you been doing it? Well, we started a couple of days ago. Yeah. So that conversation
it's
was
my
hard.
First day.
Yeah. Yeah.
It pretty much was like that. And then on the other front, it was trying to talk to coaches that would answer and say, why are we going to take someone from the other side of the globe who's never played in a game? We don't know what they're like and we haven't seen them. So on two fronts, it was really hard to get the students involved but also get the coaches on board. And that's where, again, the 2 or 3 years of trying and getting connections with John Bonamago, who was my special teams coach at Green Bay, and John Dorsey and Darren Simmons, all these guys then said, I ended up saying, hey, listen, John, the two Johns, if I go back and train guys and get them to a level that I now knows legit, will you look at them? And they said, yeah, absolutely. They then opened up their little black book for college coaches and said, here's some coaches you can call, reference my name, and that opened the door. And that's pretty much where it started. We met Ray Guy. We met Rick Sang. He then helped get Jordan Berry to Eastern Kentucky. Johnny knew someone at Hawaii. And again, via one of those connections, we helped Tommy Dydenham get to Portland State, and that's where it started. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've heard in a previous interview that you've done that you kind of the focus was on getting ex-AFL sort of listed guys into the NFL, and then you kind of shifted the, I guess, your business model or, you know, whatever you called it to more the college-focused thing. Now, was that just to try and get the foot in the door, get the contacts, get the reputation, get the runs on the board? Were you always looking to go down the college path, do you think?
I would say not initially because I didn't know anything about it. Mm. All I knew was I played AFL and you go and play in the NFL. I didn't really know much about college. So when that was brought to my attention, it was like, oh, okay, we can get, you know, there's 500 colleges. Mm. There's 32 teams in the NFL. Okay. Well, the numbers suggest that's where we got to go. But we also knew the NFL's a hard job to get and there's only a couple of spots open every year. And the guys that we would be sending over would be graded as harshly as I was, given if you make a mistake, it's too scary because you've never played. We've got no experience. We've got no game tape. So it's easy for the NFL teams to say no because their jobs are on the line if they vouch for you. Mm. Once we knew we could get them to college, then all of a sudden it's like they're going to get their own experience. The cream will rise to the top through either ability or opportunity. And then we knew we could test out some AFL players going straight to the NFL. But then over the long term, once our college guys got experience and came out the other side, they would be as good as anything else going through college level, you know, the Americans. And then therefore we thought we would overrun by weight of numbers of sending guys to college to then start to overrun the NFL from that way.
Yeah, it's like the other side of the coin.
But also didn't really want the AFL players to think that the NFL was a retirement fund. Oh, this is easy. We can kick. Mm. Yeah, the guys in the US love Australians, therefore it's that easy. And if the message was getting out like that, the players that we were training wouldn't train as hard. And I'm like, well, no, it's actually really hard. And it's our reputation.
59 yards and I couldn't get in.
Yeah. So getting that reputation and sort of making anyone who felt like it was going to be just, simple. We had to stamp that out.
Yeah, not just an easy paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, after your AFL career's done.
Mm. Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
But then we also knew once we had 24-year-olds coming out, the NFL's not going to want 32-year-olds who they thought are banged up and too old and too slow, which they can still kick, and you can still kick to 44. It's a big ask to get signed and get the job when you've never played before. So the guys who had done it previously, unbelievable. But, yeah, that was big talents too.
And being a washed-up 32-year-old that has kicked, I think it was in the fives that day.
We've got tape, so just be careful. you did well just to catch the ball, actually.
I did, absolutely.
This will be a short conversation.
No, it was more for you. Do you think, obviously, the fact that you went over there and you had nothing behind you, having something like Pro Kick for yourself back then, like it would have been a vastly different experience.
Yeah, because I would just get some balls, kick them out of my hands, and I'm like, how am I going to be faster? What are the areas to be faster? So when I got to Green Bay too, they go, cool, you look different. We're going to change your stepping pattern. We're going to change the way you hold it. And can you do this with your leg? So my natural kick was taken away because they made me want to look like something they've seen before. Mm. So if you do anything from a muscle memory point of view, it takes time and you need to get it right. A golf swing, change anything there, it takes time, right? So they've asked me to be your best, try and win the job, but can we change everything that you do? And so therefore, I literally had to learn on the hop, like, okay, so I think you want me to do this. Is this right? But also perform at the same time. And again, I won't say it was difficult, but when I first got there and I didn't have my work visa, I wasn't initially allowed to train with the team. So the team would train and then I'd go inside and then they'd put me through some kicking stuff inside because officially I wasn't allowed to.
Is this because you were getting in the spa with
your job? It might have been punishment.
Keep that naked man indoors.
When no one can see.
So then literally the first real time in front of a rush and in front of everything was right at training camp. So 2 or 3 weeks of actual training into a game. So, you know, I had to learn pretty quick, which obviously I didn't because I kicked shit out, so they kicked me out.
But for those that don't know, like, and you're saying the old guys thinking, and I reckon I remember that time, 2008, you know, Benny Graham and that have gone over there. Everyone thinks, just go over there, get a couple of million and a great way to finish your career. But with good protection, you know, you're getting pressure in, what, 1.2, 1.1 seconds? Like,
yeah,
it's not easy.
No, and that's an adjustment because the kick counts, where it goes, what it looks like, and the location. So, yeah, you can get it off quick enough and you kick it somewhere. Mm. In Aussie rules.
Where's it going?
Once you make a mistake, you can fix up your mistake in a split second by laying a tackle or getting a handball and we kick a goal. But then it's all about, are you fast enough? Does it look good? And does it help our team? And so there's the adjustment of not just getting the ball in your boot, but actually being really good at it. So if you've got to create time, you've got to find ways to step cleaner, shorter, have the ball in your hand at a certain point so that you don't have to mess around with it. And all of those things weren't taught to me. It's like, well, just catch it, take your 3 steps and kick it. But I'm like, how am I going to be at 1.2? I kept timing myself. I'm like, how am I going to get this down? How do I be quicker? I feel like I'm running already. So having the guidance of someone to say, this is how it happens, this is what it looks like, these are some areas you can work on would have helped. But yeah, I had to work that out at the time, which was fun, interesting. And I just talked to
someone. On.
Yeah. And when and she got pretty windy at Green Bay too. So, the ugly was ugly, put it that way. It was pretty difficult to kick. Yeah.
I would have loved to see in the conversation, like, oh, what are you using at home? Have you heard of a Sharon?
It's red.
Yeah.
It's a bit more different.
But again, they gave me the opportunity. It's a great part of my life and thankful for it.
But so now I suppose on the flip side of that and the pathway and opportunity you're providing for the guys coming through the Pro Kick program, at what ages are you sort of seeing? Because I think I've heard you say it's kind of ageless. Age isn't a really factor for you guys, but like, what's the earliest you're seeing guys come through and want to be part of your program?
The proper answer is probably 14 or 15 is when we're now seeing more of those emails come through. But I do have a security guard down at the Tigers who wants to bring his 4-year-old down, and I'm like, listen. He's going to need a little bit more time. Let him play the soccer and let him play the basketball.
That's early.
And then come to us when he's in year 10 or 11. So what's great about that is it is a legitimate pathway for young men to get educated. They still get to kick a ball. They can still chase a professional sport type deal because we really do value college football as basically being professional entities now that they're actually getting paid, right? Mm. So, and it gets them outside of their comfort zone. It makes them think about traveling the world. There's all these benefits from it. And there's a really good pathway. It's now just still harder to get into college. The talent level's gone up. And, you know, what used to be a good average at 40 is now a good average is 48. And that's massive in college football. So, so that age bracket of coming in, if you're in it for longer, still play your other sports, but understand what you're doing, how to be better. It's much more beneficial than someone coming and saying, can I do this in 8 months?
Yeah, for sure.
And you're saying some of the stuff, like you're saying how difficult it is now to get into colleges, but you've saved $54 million in education fees, 270 plus full scholarship, Ray Guy award winners. How does it make you feel like hearing all those numbers now?
Yeah, I think it's 9. I just haven't updated the website for a while.
No.
So,
lovely.
That's
we've
my
just
fault.
Had one.
Yeah.
Tori just won it, was it?
Yeah, I'm in charge of that. So that's you can slap myself on the wrist.
Back-end stuff,
yeah.
Look how long it took us to get this interview. We're not surprised. It's not updated.
That's pretty much how it works. it's pretty cool. Like I said, it's pretty cool. We probably don't celebrate it enough. There's always something else to do. But again, upon reflection, it is pretty cool. And those numbers would suggest that that it is achievable. So if you wanted to do it, yes, you do need to work hard, but it's not across your fingers as in, the people guiding us ourselves don't know what we're doing. We know what we're doing, but the coaches now just need an instant guy. They need someone to come in and dominate because this transfer portal and NIL money and all that type of thing has just meant that you better deliver from day one or we'll probably let you go.
I think the other thing too, like 270 plus full scholarships, it's not just the playing career. It's like you're setting these guys up for life. Like I've got good mates that have gone through your system and done quite well. Tom Hornsey, he's one of your coaches down in Geelong. Yeah. I played some school footy and junior footy with him. So yeah, you're not just giving them the opportunity for a college career, which is great in itself. Like you're setting them up for life, like with these degrees, meeting family, meeting partners over there. I've got a couple of mates from the Torquay Footy Club that has met and married over there, like still living over there to this day. So the opportunity that you're providing to these people is huge. Like, and I think like that's got to be so fulfilling, especially going through your journey as well.
Yeah. And that's probably where everyone's got their own story and journey, and some are what might look easier, but they've come from, from the, he trained for 6-12 months, got a scholarship, went over there and did well. Yeah. But they've not always come from great backgrounds or great academic backgrounds or family backgrounds or sporting ones, so once we get to know them and guide them through that, we are really a facilitator in this education program. We feel like we're an education program, but we get what we need by kicking a football. So there's that balance. Once they holistically buy into what they're about to do, we've got to send young men over to America to support themselves, not have their instant family network around them, and they've got to, survive in a professional football environment but they may never have been around. There's some really, high intensity things that we've got to get them ready for because they don't know what they don't know. And I like this because I can sit in my lounge room on a comfy couch on a warm night and watch college football. That looks fun. I want to do it. Okay, but
I do that every week.
But what does that involve?
And so, playing in the cold, having the pressures of social media, having schoolwork due, having
playing in front of 80,000 at these bigger schools and 100,000.
And then sort of if things are going well, it can feel good. If things aren't going well, you don't just go home and catch up with, your family or parents for a good feed and refresh and go back there. It's like, no, you're in the next day. You're sore, you're hurting, you're emotionally flat, and you've got to get yourself up because the social media world also lets you know how you're going. So we've got a fair bit of work to do on getting their professional mindset around. And we've, in the last few years, been really fortunate to have Liz Quinn, Lieutenant Commander Liz Quinn, who I work with at the Tigers. Sorry, I'm cramping. And
rub it out, Macca.
There's the athlete in me, right?
Yeah, Macca.
I don't want to go where that looks like it's great.
It looks deep.
So she's working on the professional mindset. So, again, our program's trying to get bigger. in, again, making them really well rounded so that they can go over and perform at their best. But they've got to lean into that here too. Mm. Yeah, they've got to want to achieve all of those areas.
Yeah, which T-Mac have been, and I have been lucky enough to actually come down and watch a practice and seeing you down there and seeing all the, as you're saying, young men getting prepared to hopefully get over there. Everyone seems super committed. And the way that you guys are coaching as well seems like very structured in a way that you're going to help them in the best way possible.
Yeah, well, we hope so. We've got to keep developing those things. And each time we might get a group of guys that are all professional mindset and it feels easy. And we might get a young batch that have lost their way and we've got to build them up. So that journey for us always changes as well. So each 6 months we get a brand new batch of guys and we've got to transition them all who are all at different ages and different stages of their careers and lives and blend them into one. And that's where that unique journey is. So we often say, hey, listen, don't ask anyone else about their journey because they might have different academics, they might have different background. Just focus on yourself. You'll get through, but you've got to worry about you and not maybe what you think's going on out here. So that's a challenge for us, but that's what we have to deal with.
Mm. Looking at I've got the same stats that the boys are just reading off then, but the guys that have lost their way to turn around and go, well, I just watched my fourth guy play in the Super Bowl. We've got guys winning Grey Cups in the CFL. We've got the boys making highlight reels with double kicks every week. $1.6 million or whatever it was for Cam. Like, surely that's an easy way to go. Boys, if you work hard, there is a carrot at the end.
Yeah, and I think the guys who have gone previously have really opened up that. And the conversation around being Australians, the different kicks that have come into the NFL, like there is a real change in the way the NFL sees Australians and more open to it. There'll be more kicks that come into it, which I guess go into our wheelhouse. But the US lads are on our tail and they're chasing really hard and they're learning all these kicks. So we just got to try and be better. But it does mean that, okay, it's happened multiple times. If I'm in that elite profile and I can dedicate myself, there is a big future in it.
But it's a fair carrot.
Just because you can kick doesn't mean your journey's going to be good. And just because you think you want to do it means you'll make it. There's a lot of stuff that goes on over the three or four years of college. There's a lot of good luck that needs to happen. And you need to be in the right place at the right time for an NFL team to take you. So good luck to the guys who make it. But, yeah, the numbers would suggest that many don't. So be very, very happy and focused on your college career and make the most out of that before you worry about making a career in the NFL because college can be really fun and exciting, but it can also spit you out really quick.
But as you're saying, college is now a career because you're giving them a full scholarship. They're going to go away with a full degree. And like you're saying, there's the opportunity now to actually get paid while you're at college.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like some of the guys are getting some money, which is cool. Sets them up. It's not the thing to strive for, but if you're a good person, you go over and do a good job, those opportunities will come, which is just like, you know, the next level in the pros. So, gone what seems, not, and it's not in every case yet, but gone are the days where, okay, you got your education paid for, but you can't afford, you know, an extra meal. Now, yeah, you've got those opportunities, so can make it a little bit more rewarding, but you better kick that damn ball where it needs to go. Otherwise, you don't get anything.
Do you think with the likes of, like, obviously Sipper the year before and then Mitch this year, like, Australian lads going to the Super Bowl and punting, do you think this, like, stigma around Aussie punters being in the NFL is shifting?
I think because, again, Dicko's great at it, Mitch is great at it, Cam's done a good job, Sipper was doing it at the Eagles, these different kicks, it's not as sterile as you just take two steps and hit a spiral and just let's go and kick it to the returner. This is now a cat and mouse game. How do we get an advantage? Let's kick it away from them. And the people, the coaches within the NFL now have got their eyes or their mind open that there can be a different way. And it's now who's trying to get that advantage quicker than the other teams. What can my punter do? Why does Mitch kick really high bananas at 35, 40 yards rather than kick at 60? Because the percentages are that returner is going to drop it. So let's make him drop it versus get the extra 10 yards. So they're seeing it unfold, and now it's opening up that stuff at the college level. we get more practice at it. And the NFL's like, right, we've just got to keep finding those advantages and making use of them.
Yeah. And you always feel, especially with trick plays and punting and things like that, a lot of the time you think, oh, it'll trickle down from the NFL like it would here, AFL down to the VFL, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like over there, if they're doing it in college, it trickles up into the NFL and they start implementing the things that the guys at the bottom level are doing.
Yeah, and there's, again, some of the people who know would always say that, yeah, you can't do a rollout kick in the NFL because of. Well, they do it. And, okay, so I'd say the saying is, make sure you're the first to be second. Mm-hmm. Let someone else do it, but then you better make sure you're the next guy. And that's how you get your advantage before.
And be good at it.
Yeah, and be good at it. So, it's shifting. And there'll be still some good moments and some bad. And that's, you know, there's the beauty of the sport. And the NFL is, well, if you get it bad too many times, I'll get rid of you and I'll get someone else.
Not for long, isn't it, NFL?
Yeah, true.
Yeah. You've been incredibly generous with the time, mate. Just a couple more questions before we let you go get that cramp.
After the osteo next, though. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, make sure that we can send them live footage if they need it. Yeah. 17, 18 years ago now, sitting down there, you know, a pretty young chappy and Johnny having a chat. You have to work hard to listen to Johnny. For those that have spoken to Johnny, he's good to talk to, but you have to make sure you're attentive.
Actually, I'd love to actually have a, I'm sure there's an app on your phone that says how long you've actually spoken to a certain person. I'd have a couple of years worth of time on that phone with Johnny.
Yeah. Over the 18 years, I'm sure it's more than a couple.
Yeah,
I've had a couple of years with him. I've been known for a couple of years.
Yeah.
What would you go back and, you know, tell those two blokes sitting there, you know, what to expect, obviously, but, you know, what is there anything you changed? Like, what would you go back and say to those two boys?
I think we did it, but we would have probably had to tell ourselves a bit more often, stick at it.
Ever a time that you thought we can't do this anymore?
Oh, it was weekly. Like, this is... Look, the way I saw it was I was travelling from Brisbane to Melbourne initially. As soon as we took someone's money to train them, our morals were we finished the job. And so we got to where we got to because there was always someone paying you. If there had been a time where, right, everyone's paid their money and there's no more people joining, it would have been really easy to get a job somewhere else. But there's always the next guy join. And then so it sort of meant that it carried on as slow as a trickle as it was. You know, it was almost like I think the first year we might have, you know, made $9,000 in sales of getting people in. It cost $3,000 to join the program at the time. We gave them 10 footballs and I travelled from Brisbane to Melbourne every week. So made nine, spent 25 in travel. Like the numbers weren't there. And so the message, which I think we ended up doing and we say all the time is we are where we are now because we were too stupid to stop, but we were really committed to giving the value to the people and getting them educated, and that just spurred us on to carry on. So, hey, lads, stick at it. There'll come a day where you'll sit down and have a glass of wine and reminisce on some stories that have been pretty cool over the journey.
Is there, last one from me, I don't know if the boys have got any more, but have you had I know that it was in the works to have an alum kind of catch up. Has that ever happened?
It hasn't happened. I turned 50 next year. We thought maybe it was an opportunity to get some people together. I've organised some trips in the past. I've taken some pro kick lads to America, and that's hard. So an alumni with all of the guys who've gone over and people who've been around, it might be some quiet event.
It'll be 273.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do plus threes.
Yeah. So I think that'd be pretty cool. There's a lot of great stories along the way, and a lot of great, you know, a lot of times it was hard for the guys to come back, do their 3 or 4 years at college, but have no one to talk to about it. And so now that has sort of grown, and as they connect with other pro kick guys and stories are, hey, I met this guy. Yes, my friend's done it and he's went through your program. That's been pretty cool. It allows them to really, I guess, probably express how their journey was, but also get something back and connect with someone and say, shit, thanks, this was great. What was your story like? I remember the time. What was your coach like? Was he good? Was he hard? So it'd be funny to have, you know, a few hundred people in a room and just talking about their, you know, the good times and the bad times and sort of hopefully laugh about it now. Is it, you can only laugh at the end of the day. It was, might not have felt funny at the time, but yeah, we all go through a story and hopefully they've enjoyed it and they've moved on and used some of those things that they've learnt to, yeah, put themselves in a better spot where they are now. So that's probably something that we get, you know, we I guess, pinch ourselves or feel really good when we hear those stories after that. So maybe an alumni party is not a bad idea, but we'll have it at your backyard.
Yeah, that's a good idea. At the moment, it seemed like it's happening that way because a few of the Pro Kick lads that we've interviewed are like, oh, have you spoken to him? Oh, like, what are they doing? Like, they're like having a mini catch-up like through us. So, so now you have to invite us.
Yeah.
What's the plan from here? Where's Pro Kick going?
We got to get our guys better and more ready for the college that they go into. Coaches are really hot on sending over product that's ready to go. The landscape's changed. We'll continue to train harder. We're our training facility, we're going to try and develop that. We're going to try and change our training program that's going to suit more with the college. And we've always got to stay a step ahead of what's coming next in college, and that's probably what we're trying to do with our players. But more people are interested in it. But it just means that, you know, that means you just need to be better to get out the door at the other end.
More work. Yeah. Last one for me, because I know we're pressed for time. Draft upcoming, few Pro Kick boys, potentially Tory Taylor, maybe one.
Yeah.
Potentially going. Any news from you that you've heard any rumblings?
I don't trust anything about the NFL draft because we've had multiple. I've sat down at players, at their family's house on draft day, and in the sixth round have had the player in America ring us and say, hey, just had a phone call from, they're going to take me, and they're not. Mm. And that's the worst feeling. So I think about four drafts in, we're like, I'm never, ever watching another draft. It'll unfold because I can't go through the stress of it.
Yeah.
So we've had that happen a few times, and we've had guys who have been drafted, but it's too early in the morning because I don't get up and watch it that early.
Johnny will watch it.
Johnny will watch it. And so we'd feel like, Tory Taylor's in a great spot, and Jordy Sandy, Matty Hayball, like there's some guys who have actually come out, done a really good job. Are the spots there to be drafted? Yep, there might be a couple. Tory's come out with a great profile, so we would probably think that he's, one of the first off the board, which is great. And if it doesn't happen, get to a team that needs a spot. And like I said, the draft is just cream on the top. Yep, it's a great story, but in fact, the work starts again. You can make the team whether you draft it or not. So forget that. It's not a badge of honour. It's just, hey, how do I get my next opportunity, whether that's through the draft or not? Being drafted means some money in the bank, but you still got to perform. So we're excited about it. We think that we're in a pretty good spot to see someone drafted. But who knows? It's sport. We don't make the rules, and it only takes one player to be available for them to go, shit, we won't get the punter now. Let's hope we get another one. Because they can get some other linebacker who's been passed on. So, we've seen all sorts. We just sit back, watch it unfold, and try and keep the players calm and ready and steady and just say, hey, just move on to what's next. Don't get sidetracked with it and don't get emotionally too attached to being drafted. So, good advice. Hard to play out there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, because they'll bring you in and they'll tell you that you're not getting picked anyway. So.
Yeah.
Mate, you've been incredibly generous. I could sit here and talk to you for hours, so can't thank you enough. For those who are trying to get in contact with you, find you on the socials, Pro Kick Australia. Don't send you an Instagram message. You might not hear back. try the emails. They're a bit better, but the application process,
that's it.
But no, mate, we can't appreciate it. We can't thank you enough and appreciate your time for coming on.
Yeah, no, it's great. Great to see this ball, Seahawks run. I don't know where you got my helmet from, but are you going to get that back? That's a cracker, actually. I like it.
I know it is.
Yeah. No, I do thank you. Again, love the work you guys put in, and I know you love your NFL and college, and it's really good to watch the banner go around. So I appreciate being on here, and let's see if we can retweet after a nice draft next week or whenever it is.
For sure.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.